past and future, out of self-seeking through past and future. Because remember, self-seeking through past is deriving the sense of who I am from me and my story that I keep telling myself in the head and others. Finding that my story is not satisfying enough, not complete, sense of lack, even fear, and then desperately needing to get to the future in order for the story to complete itself, and it never does. So that's the level of illusion, and you awaken out of that and realize that you cannot find yourself in the future. And the amazing realization also comes that you are not the only one whose story is not complete and fulfilled. Everybody's story, even if they look fine on the surface, hasn't completed itself. But there are a few people who briefly, some people for brief moments believe that, yes, my story is now complete. I have found the person who's going to make me happy, for example. It has completed itself. And you may think what the speaker is saying may be true for everybody else except for me, because I just found the person who is going to make me happy. Or I just made $5 million on the stock market, and, well, I don't know if that's possible these days, but, and my story is actually fine now, and it's completed itself, I made it. That operates, that illusion lasts for a little while, and then, oh no, that wasn't the person who was going to make me happy. Something went wrong. It didn't work. What do I do? I need to find another person who's going to make me happy. How? Well, I'm going to see that future comes in again. And so you miss this moment. When you're identified with mind, derive your sense of self from that, the one thing you miss always is the now, because it doesn't fit into my story, it's not quite right, and if it's not interesting enough, this, no, not now, I don't want that. And the amazing thing is, well, that's all you ever have. There is only now, ever. Well, nothing that you can do or feel, even think or experience can be if it's not now. It has to be now. Your whole life is inseparable from now. There is nothing else. The past, it seems huge, but you have to remember it now, otherwise it has no existence. And what you remember happened in the now. When it happened, it left a trace in the mind, but you can only remember that now. And future, a mental projection, the mind says, that moment will arrive and that will be the now. When the future comes, it can only come as the now, of course. Nobody has ever encountered the future. So there's the illusion that there is past, present, and future. It looks very real. But if you look deeply, you can see that there is only the present that includes the past and the future. So that the one thing that is inseparable from life itself is the field of now. It's always now. Nobody could argue with that, I believe, that your life is always now. But it's hard, one cannot even fully grasp intellectually the significance of that. The mind says, well, is it always now? I'm not quite sure. Because the past seems so, there's so much there, and the future seems so important. Is there only now? I'm trying to work it out. It is almost as if the mind stopped when you realize that there's only now, and then to miss that continuously, almost continuously, what a life. You miss the one thing that's real for some projection, mental projection, an abstraction ultimately, because every thought is an abstraction, and future is a mental abstraction. It works well on a the practical realm, fine. But then you become a mental abstraction. You're looking for completion as a mental abstraction, me. So the amazing thing is that whole mindset, and this has been human life, this has been motivating human activity for thousands of years. That particular state of consciousness, that is self-identification with mind, even at the time of Jesus and the Buddha, that was already there, and then it became even stronger. And so one is not... It's not surprising if you look at human history, you can see how mad it is to a lot of it. How much, why are they, what is that need to continuously be in conflict, in violence, conflict, almost continuous? Because the mind-based sense of self is always in conflict. It's in conflict with itself, and it's in conflict with others. It actually needs to be in conflict, because it needs to feel a separate sense of me, the special little me, and those are the others who are not the special little me. Or if it's a collective sense of identity, in some cultures it's predominantly us rather than me, but it's the same mind pattern. Them against us. And we need them, because without them, we don't know who we are anymore. So that's the madness of... Of course, if you look at human history, it's simply an expression of the predominant human state of consciousness. Collectively, everybody's consciousness. Now, if human history looks mad, as it certainly does, and senseless violence and conflict and so much suffering inflicted by humans on other humans and other life forms and the planet. If that is mad, then where does that madness arise? It must arise in normal human consciousness. So what is normal human consciousness has a strong element of insanity to it. But it's so normal that one cannot, if you're completely in it, you can't, if everybody else is insane, then it looks very normal. Insane means normal. But to see it for the first time and to see the root of the insanity actually in oneself, each human mind inherited, it's not a personal problem of mine, or I'm insane. Human, that's normal human consciousness. Now the amazing thing is, and this is something that you don't need to believe, I'm just saying it, there is a new consciousness that is now arising that goes beyond the insanity. For the first time on a larger scale. It has already been there in a few isolated individuals over the years. Thousands of years ago, a few individuals already went beyond that, and they entered a different state of consciousness, and some of them became the great teachers, and others perhaps were not even noticed by others. Maybe they just taught a few people around them. So some humans in the past went beyond that level of consciousness into a level that does not generate conflict and suffering. Because that state of consciousness that we have been talking about is a state that continuously generates conflict and suffering. and violence. Those teachers went beyond that and they saw suddenly what is possible for humans. And then they somehow tried to express it through words. And words, of course, are always inadequate. But somehow they tried to express that, and the Buddha said, what I teach is the end of suffering. That was the essence of it. The end of suffering. Or Jesus said, he talked mostly in stories or parables because he had to somehow reach those people. He never used the word consciousness, because if Jesus had used the word consciousness, people would have gone, what? A new level of consciousness? They would all have gone home. So he used certain images, the kingdom of heaven that is within you, here and now, not over there, not in the future. He talked about, look at the flowers, how they're not concerned about future, how they're totally present in the now, and how the one intelligence, the one consciousness that pervades the entire universe expresses itself so beautifully as through that form. And how would this one intelligence, this one consciousness that pervades the entire universe and expresses itself so beautifully through billions of forms, all impermanent but beautiful while they are there, how would that one consciousness not live and manifest and express itself through you beautifully if you only opened yourself up to that? That's what he said. And so when he said, look at the flower, he said, look at that. And it requires you to truly look. Anything in nature, truly look. How unproblematic everything in nature is. How everything in nature, animal or plant, is itself, is aligned with the totality, not yet separated itself out of from the totality, removed itself and claimed a separate existence for itself as a little me. How it's aligned, every animal and tree and plant, it just is itself. No human, unless they haven't, except those in whom the mind hasn't started yet, or have gone already beyond mind, no human is itself. A human being cannot be him or herself fully, because they have created a mental image of themselves. So they have made themselves through self-reflective consciousness into a mind object. That's me, the me. And so life becomes very problematic when you split yourself off into I and myself. Myself is the mental image of who I think I am. So, and I then have a problematic sense of self, totally normal. Everybody has a problematic sense of self. And it manifests largely as a problematic existence. Life is problematic. And it continuously, problems arise that I need to fight with. So sense of self is problematic. And nothing in nature has made an object out of itself. The cat is itself. The deer is itself. It just doesn't say, I have a problem with this, with myself. It just isn't. So the totality or the one consciousness expresses itself. Of course it has certain limitations of that particular form, but it expresses itself beautiful through that form. The flower, totally present. They're not running away from this moment. They're completely here. Or if you watch an animal, how it moves, when it rests. No animal tries to rest. I'm trying to relax. Now, trying already means because you have made yourself into an object. I'm trying to... They're not trying. They just... It happens. So that's the unproblematic existence of all of nature, and humans inhabit a world of problems because they have made themselves into a mind object, the mental image of me. You then have a relationship with yourself. That's a difficult one. I have a relationship with myself, and it's not going too well. But I can't get rid of myself. And many people live with a sense of self that is so unpleasant, and with a voice in the head that is so hostile and critical. You would never live with such a person. You would have divorced them a long time ago. It would be torture to live with someone like that. You would just walk out. But you have that thing in your head, and you can't even walk out, because wherever you go, it goes with you. What a... awful. And then you say, I and myself. I am this, I am that. And you might have psychoanalysis for 20 years. Nothing wrong with that. Psychoanalysis will examine the content of your mind. Let's look at this bit, and now let's look at that, and let's examine that in more detail, and let's cut this. Oh, isn't that interesting? There's more, and then let's go more into... Nothing wrong with that. But it's content. Oh, and then after 20 years, the psychoanalyst, that's three times a week, the psychoanalyst says, now we have completed your psychoanalysis, you now know yourself. And then he gives you the file of yourself. And anything you can look up in there, if you want to know yourself, you know yourself. And then you say, I know myself, it's all in here. And in saying that, and it's true, what you know is the content that is yourself, your sense of self. You know that now. And yet, life remains problematic. And you've forgotten, when you made that statement, I know myself, you have forgotten who is that I who is making that statement. We know who the self is, but who is that I? Have you examined that? Oh, can't work that out. I know myself, so there must be that sense of self, which is the content of my mind that I now know. And then there's someone who says, I know, I. Who is that? In all those 20 years of psychoanalysis, I only looked at myself, but never looked at I. Because I was looking at my past, and I is eternally present. I is presence itself. And because I've been looking only at past, there's nothing wrong with that, but I neglected that continuous sense of presence that is I, the knowing itself, that which enables me to know, the very field of knowing that enables me to know. I never looked. I only looked at what arises in that field, the objects of knowledge. But the very thing that is a no-thing that makes all knowledge possible, I never looked at that. I only looked at objects. Not never at the I, the underlying I. When I've been using the word I, which is such a favorite word to every little me, when I used the word I was always referring to, of course, to me and my story. And that's the self that I now know. But then what about the I that knows? So there is a deeper sense of essential identity, an I am-ness that has nothing to do with content. Content arises in it. But there is a deeper sense of I am-ness that has nothing to do with your past or your future. It is eternally present. And perhaps it was that Jesus referred to when he made this peculiar statement, before Abraham was, I am. And it is perhaps that when in the Old Testament God is questioned about his, her, its essential identity, who are you, what's your name, whatever the question is, and God says, I am that I am. The I am, the one I am, is a deeper sense of presence that has nothing to do with the content of your mind. But the content exists within that field of spaciousness, of presence. And some people have accidentally stumbled upon that, sometimes only for brief moments. Some people, when their life was threatened, death was looked almost imminent. For example, they were driving along in a car at great speed and suddenly something went wrong and they knew the accident was inevitable. And there are many accounts you can read about that. They survived, but they reported the last few seconds before, when it seemed a fatal accident was inevitable, there was a gap suddenly when they reported. They suddenly entered a state of great serenity and peace and aliveness. One could say, at that moment, future was removed from them, or so it seemed. There was no more time. Time was removed from them. And with the removal of time, something emerged from within, and they experienced that as great sense of presence, aliveness, serenity, peace. Something emerged from within that had nothing to do with the mentally derived sense of self and nothing to do with past and future. And they were suddenly free of fear in a situation where you would say they would be in dreadful fear. In some of those people, suddenly there was a moment of total fearlessness. And that was they survived, and they said, this was the most incredible moment of my life. And so for a moment, something collapsed within them, momentarily subsided, that whole sense of self, and something else emerged that is far more vital, alive, powerful, and intelligent, far more intelligent than the limited intelligence of the human mind. And then in other cases, people have reported suddenly action was needed. They needed to intervene. Somebody was being attacked or was in a dangerous situation. And they suddenly found themselves without any thought. Thought subsides in those situations, because thought needs time. Thought subsides, and something else, a great intelligence that is vaster than thought but does not exclude thought, because there's only one intelligence, there's only one consciousness. And that unconditioned consciousness, vastness, emerged and took over. And they found themselves taking action, unpremeditated, and it was totally right for that moment. Action spontaneously arose. So a greater intelligence took over. And then other people stumbled upon it accidentally, whose very existence was threatened by the most dreadful situation. They found themselves in a life situation that was so unbearable and the suffering was so extreme that they could not stand it anymore, such as concentration camp, prison camp, or imminent death of the physical body, and or even waiting for execution. And those who survived, some of those, not all, it's only potentially, it's always the potential for this transformation in those situations is there, who survived, reported a few of them, suddenly something else emerged and they found themselves in a state of great peace, serenity. They also speak of love and joy suddenly emanating regardless of the situation. So to some people it happened through intense suffering, and in the midst of hell there was suddenly the kingdom of heaven that is within, that state that is free of suffering. So some people have stumbled upon this accidentally, and I believe that the great teachers who taught the transformation of human consciousness, so the essence of the teaching, they also stumbled upon it accidentally. And then it became, after a little while, but in those teachers, strangely, that state of consciousness remained. It didn't, as in many cases, people who had the experience while driving the car and the imminent accident, they had an insight and then it became a memory. But in some people, it actually became a permanent transformation. So continuously then, that deeper level of their being, the I am-ness, the sense of presence, of aliveness, was there continuously. And then they looked back and saw, oh, it happened when everything collapsed in my life. When my story collapsed, that's when it happened. They're looking back, and then they suddenly see it didn't happen when more things were added to me. It actually happened when things were removed from me. It actually happened at a time of diminishment of me, of the self. It didn't happen at the time of added content. And they look back, oh, that's amazing. That's how it happened. And then they attempted to help others to enter that state. But to a large extent, humanity wasn't ready for it. So a few individuals were ready, but humanity as a whole was by no means ready. And they even got angry at that. And so we know what happened to some of it. They killed Jesus. They also killed the stories in Islam. Some of the Sufi mystics got killed. It becomes very threatening, that message. It's threatening to the mind-made sense of self. So that was... And now humanity as a whole has been through tremendous suffering of thousands of years, enormous suffering. So one could almost say that it becomes almost a collective transformation now for humanity, because it's been awful. Look at the 20th century. It's the worst century of human suffering in terms of numbers of humans killed by other humans. Total madness. Humanity is ready for this transformation of consciousness now. Not only ready, the planet wouldn't even survive if human consciousness remained unchanged for another 100 years. Imagine just more of the same thing, of what, another 20th century perhaps, or worse. It would be hell. So there's now, for humans even to survive, the transformation of human consciousness is a necessity. It's no longer a luxury. We could say, in the past few thousand years, it's been a luxury, and there have been a few flowerings of that new state of consciousness. But now it becomes a necessity. And that's why it's happening now on a larger scale. And it doesn't seem as if much were happening here. We are sitting here. And yet it's very significant that to see the mind-identified consciousness, to recognize it, is already the beginning of something new arising. And so that which is arising is, we could call it, the unconditioned consciousness. And it is characterized by a great sense of inner stillness, not dead stillness, very alive stillness. And to the human mind, that is not interesting at all. If the human mind doesn't know that that stillness that is the vast realm of, I sometimes also call it a spaciousness within you, a sense of space or spaciousness, that is intelligence itself, pure intelligence, it is pure consciousness itself, unconditioned consciousness, the one consciousness that then becomes form, is born into a form, it becomes a thought. But prior to form, it is pure, pure potential, the ground of all existence, of all being. And then it is born into billions of forms. It loves that. But yet, it is always itself. It is the unformed, the unconditioned, the unborn God, if God has any meaning, that God is the essence of who you are. Not an entity that somehow, somewhere in space or somewhere controls everything. It's the very essence of your being. If you go deep enough, you find that essence. And the amazing and wonderful thing is that you don't need time for that. In fact, that's the one thing you don't want. To know who you are, just can only know that now. And what arises is the state of consciousness that I call presence. That is a state in which thought can operate, but is no longer compulsive. When thought is not needed, thought subsides, and you are totally here. There's simply a field of alive presence. And you can look around the room, you can look at anything, perceive, and no longer need to label it. That is a miracle. You can look, you can watch, you see everything, but the compulsion to interpret and to label everything as soon as it appears isn't there. You can when labels are needed, but you're no longer compulsively trapped in mental labels and have to call everything and interpret everything immediately. So you perceive, and I suggest you start with nature. Look at something in nature and see how you can actually perceive it through stillness. And there's suddenly a spaciousness around, and that's only a word, a little pointer. There's suddenly a spaciousness around that which you perceive. So there's the object, your sense perception, but around it there's a spacious sense of presence. That's the deeper meaning of now, what really now means. Because now is the field in which everything happens. There are not many moments, there's only one eternal moment, and that is now. It's always now. What happens in it changes continuously. Forms arise, forms subside. Continuous fluctuation of forms. That's the nature of phenomenal existence. And that's problematic when all you know is these forms, which are either threatening or you need to hang on to them. And so you know yourself. You're no longer looking for yourself in any arising form, neither a thought, nor an emotion, nor some external form, and try to identify with that and add it to your sense of who you are. Those forms are all beautiful, they are fine, of course they are limited, their lifespan is limited, every form has a limited lifespan, and this is sounds a little bit mystical perhaps, but it's very simple. You are the spaciousness around the forms that arise. You no longer need so much not to react to the arising forms. You allow them to be. In other words, you allow this moment to be as it is. And it doesn't mean that now you can't take action anymore, because through allowing this moment to be as it is, you align yourself with life, with the one consciousness, the one intelligence, which is totally inseparable from now. It is now. As long as you fight now, you are condemned to living trapped in a mentally created entity, a little me. Align yourself with now, which means you say yes to this moment internally, no matter what arises in it. You're no longer fighting what is. You embrace what is, because it is. You can't argue with is. It is. So even if it doesn't appear wonderful, not everything that appears is, oh, great, you accept the fact that it is. The basis then for action becomes the acceptance of the isness of this moment, and enormous power is suddenly available. It manifests itself through you, and action very often happens if it's needed in the now. But it is not reactive action of a little me trying to get away from now. It is truly intelligent action, because it arises out of alignment with life itself, with the one consciousness. That's the transformation. It happens with such a simple thing as living, learning to live in alignment with now, instead of mentally closing yourself to now, denying, fighting, embracing this moment, no matter what form it takes, the suchness, the isness of this moment. Life at this moment is appearing as this form, and it is. I have no longer an argument with this, with what is. It is. And if action is needed, it comes. Just as we looked at those people who accidentally found that, and sometimes they suddenly jumped into action and because something else took over. And what they did was just right for this moment. So that's the end of conditioned existence as the little me. You still operate as a person. That level, of course, still operates. Of course you have a past as this form. This form has a past. Yes, you don't need to forget it. You won't, anyway. And you have a future as this form has a future, but they become relatively unimportant. It's not that you neglect the future, but it no longer has this seriousness or heaviness to it, because your sense of who you are emanates out of this moment. No longer. So the very thing you've been looking for, yourself, in the future, you're finding it where you hadn't been looking all that time. You find it, that it's already here now. So on a deeper level, there is already that sense of ease, of aliveness, and of, yes, love. That all the things you've been looking for is already, and it does not require the completion of your story in the head. That will somehow, it will develop in some way, of course, but it does not require completion. And people have entered that state when their story was at the most dreadful stage. Perhaps it all was totally chaotic and collapsed. And precisely then they found it. It is not a requirement for the life story to be so neat and tidy and all work out. It doesn't happen. But the strange thing is, even on the level of your story, changes take place when you no longer seek your identity through your story and the things that happen to you. Suddenly you will find that life becomes helpful rather than hostile towards you. Because you have aligned yourself with life, which is now, suddenly things happen, synchronistic events, chance meetings. Suddenly what you need suddenly comes. Very often, just right. So even the story that you don't need anymore improves suddenly. It gets so much nicer. things that happen suddenly so much more pleasant. Not that you need it. Isn't that strange? When you no longer need your story to work out, it actually works quite well. Not that it matters that much, but it actually works quite well. You might even have find somebody not who makes you happy, but you don't need that anymore. Then there's even the possibility of a relationship that works. It's possible. So that's... freedom. This is why they use these strange words in spiritual traditions. Liberation, freedom, salvation, end of suffering. Freedom, self-realization. Freedom from what? Freedom? Freedom from mind. Freedom from time and from time, from past and future. Freedom from a mentally derived sense of self. Freedom from the story. Freedom from suffering. Jesus also used the expression, the truth will make you free. Know the truth will make you free. He wasn't talking about some abstract truth, but a more vital truth. The truth of who you are, the essence of your being. That will make you free. And then his disciples said, but we are free already, we are nobody's slaves. And Jesus said, and again you have to look beyond the terminology, the words. No, you are the slaves of sin, he said. Now sin, in the original meaning of the word as used in the Bible, means missing the mark. Missing the mark is the origin of the word sin. Missing the mark of human existence. Sin, I would translate as unconsciousness. So you are slaves of unconsciousness. You are slaves of that. You are slaves of the conditioning of your mind. Your conditioned entities. That's what it, and so there is the possibility of freedom from that absurdly limited sense of self. And then, of course, the world will change by itself. Imagine a large part of humanity, or even 10%, or who knows, going through this transformation of consciousness, how the world will change. Because the world is no more than an externalization of human consciousness. That's the good news of salvation.